The need for discipline disappears when you love what you do.
Now, yes, I agree with that.
You know what I mean? Because where else would you rather be?
Yeah, I agree.
And that's where I got to the point with football. I never stayed after practice and catch footballs. Never showed up early to catch footballs until that third year and towards the end of my second year when I finally figured it out and went through that dark time. And that makes you average.
I was different. I watched, I listened to all the greats and I wanted to surpass them.
A lot of people out there.
You nervous?
No.
Nah. He's never nervous.
I know you're not nervous.
Hey, listen, why? Why you know I'm not nervous?
Hold on.
Okay.
Let me bring us in. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hot Box, and I'm Eben Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson.
Mike, we got the Hall of Fame tight end in the house.
We have greatness in the house.
Tony Gonzalez. Welcome, my brother.
Thank you. Good to be here, man.
Absolutely, dude. Man, so what'd you think about the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl?
I was happy as shit. I mean, I was there. Obviously, we worked it for Fox, and I was on the sideline. I didn't move the whole time. Because remember, it's been 50 years since they won, and I played there 12 years, and we couldn't get it done. But when I was there, and they won, and the confetti would dropped, I had this feeling of like so happy. Obviously, it wasn't me, and I know I didn't win the Super Bowl, but it's like watching one of your kids win. I guess that's the only way I can compare. Like you're really happy for them, even though I didn't win it, but part of me won it. So I guess I'll take 75% feeling.
Definitely, dude.
But it was good to see him win.
Well, you know that young kid, the quarterback,
Mahomes.
He has the light.
Yeah.
So we're going to watch him. When people have the light, we're going to watch them now. We're going to watch all their success, all their happiness. We're going to watch their failures.
Yeah.
We're going to watch their faults. We're going to watch their mistakes.
Yeah.
Human mistakes that everyone makes, but he's making them on the world stage.
Yeah, that's the pressure of him right now, right? I mean,
yeah.
He's about to become an icon.
No, I'm talking about life. I'm fuck football.
No, that's what I mean. I agree with you. She's saying that icon that's coming for him now, that fame on really an international level, maybe. Like, and I look at football, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning.
Hey, hold on. Fuck. What makes you, why do you want to be who you are?
Uh-huh. We're getting right into it. What makes me want to be who I am? You know, I think over the last, and I've been a learner for a long time. I went through it was my dark time. So in my second year in the league, and I've told people real quick, I led the league in drop passes, got benched twice. I was on my way to being a bust, and I was. I mean, it got pretty low for me. It's the lowest I've ever had. I mean, up until then, I was All-American. I was and that.
Two-sport athlete.
And then I went through a depression where I was locking myself in a room, just drinking, feeling sorry for myself. I remember crying because I'd never been through this stuff. And then from there, it gave me that thirst to learn, to really dive in. Okay, what is this thing called greatness? And how the hell can I be like Mike Tyson or Jerry Rice or anybody, like why the hell do they make it and I'm struggling right now? It ain't because I'm not big enough, fast enough, strong enough. I got that. But the shit wasn't connecting in my head and in my heart. And so I went on this, and I'm still on that journey, that where I started crushing books on Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, and started studying people's workout routine. And I realized that there's so much more. And then I didn't have that confidence. I lost that shit. I lost that belief in myself. And then I started getting into books like Deepak Chopra, Seven Spiritual Laws of Success, Dr. Wayne Dyer. Started going on this spiritual journey that I've been on still. And then over this last couple years, I've really dove into it and kind of said, and you asked me, who am I? Or at this point, it's more than just this body or the success I've had. It's like that shedding of the ego, like going behind that and saying, okay, I'm love, I'm peace, I'm joy, I'm really whatever the fuck I want to be, honestly, at this point. Like, you have that power. And I've been able to sit down with some really great thinkers and see that you create who you are. I mean, you are what you think, and you need to quiet your mind as often as possible. And there's a lot of ways to do that. We can go into that, but there's a lot of ways to quiet that mind to get down to who you are behind this body, this meat sack that we are.
Yeah.
It's deeper than that.
That's
but you, have you discovered why you exist?
I think I'm here for the human experience. And after this, where I came from before, I feel like I'm going to return there. And that's why we're here, to have this human experience and to go through life and to see, to fail, to love, to have peace, to have joy. And you have to keep leveling up. You have to keep learning those lessons. Otherwise, life will keep hitting you over the head.
What makes you become who you are? What makes you? What did you see to say, hey, I want to be this?
I think that I was curious.
Who's your father?
With my biological father?
Yeah.
Joe Gonzalez from New York. Son of immigrants.
Is he Puerto Rican?
No, he's my grandmother's from Jamaica.
Yeah.
Born in Jamaica. and my grandfather was, I guess, raised in Argentina. And then they met and had my father in New York. And so my dad is a psych therapist. Well, was.
Interesting.
A recreational therapist, not a doctor.
Okay.
Like that. No, we're not too academic on that side of the family. But he was a recreational therapist at Long Beach, in Long Beach at the Veterans Hospital for 40 years.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh.
What was the thing? How did you take that first step out of the darkness?
The first steps was I needed to fall in love with what I was doing.
Mm, I love that, dude.
And I think I played basketball too. I don't know if you knew that, but
yeah. No, we didn't.
Yes, I know.
So and I was pretty good at it. I mean, I played at Division I level college, went to Sweet 16, and so I'd always love that. Cal. Was my first love at Cal.
Yeah.
That was my first love was basketball. It's no secret. And football was just something I was really good at. But football's tough, man. It's not boxing, but you're getting your ass kicked.
No,
you're getting your ass kicked.
Listen. Football's the ultimate man sport.
Yeah.
It's
the ultimate man sport. Listen, man. I'm a fighter, and I know football, but I know what that... Listen, I can go in a boxing match and knock a guy out in 10 seconds. 30 seconds. You got to play that game.
Yeah.
You got to play that duration. I don't care. This is what I found out about Lawrence Taylor. I don't care how big you are, how strong you are, you're going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
In football.
Yeah.
I can be lucky and have a 30-second fight. Most of my fights with and he got it. I don't care how big or tough he has to go through that duration. He has to go in there with guys that their whole objective is to hurt him. Imagine that.
Yeah,
I can do that for that one thing. But imagine you having 7, 8 guys, 10 guys, 20 guys. Their objective is to put you out of business.
80 times a game.
Yeah.
80 times.
And I was
to put you out of business.
Yeah. And I was I didn't have that streak in me.
Yeah.
That ability to go to that level that you got to go to at football. That
Yeah.
And this is where it gets depending. I've had these conversations in the locker room it's a violent sport.
Yeah.
And you have to go there. You got to take your mind to that. You have to be a different person when you step on that field.
Yeah.
And I had a hard time with that.
Mm.
And basketball was just fun. Basketball is just fun. You can go play by yourself. Football, no one wants to say, hey, let's go get a couple hitting drills. At least
that.
My mind didn't like that. I was like, screw that. That's why I sucked when I first played. I quit. Pop Warner, my first year. I didn't like hitting people. I liked playing football on the playground when it was two-hand touch.
Yeah.
You put some pads on, and I got to run into you full speed with my head. I didn't like that. And so anyways, that's what happened to me. I fell in love with the sport. And when you're in love with what you do, to me, discipline, people throw that word around, and just the way I view it is discipline, there is no need for – you know. The need for discipline disappears when you love what you do. Now,
yes, I agree with that.
You know what I mean? Because where else would you rather be?
Yeah,
I agree.
And that's where I got to the point with football. I never stayed after practice to catch footballs.
Mm.
Never showed up early to catch footballs. But basketball, I did all that. I used to go to the gym for 5 hours a day.
Just shoot.
But when football, then I did that. I never did that the first 2 years until that third year. And towards the end of my second year, when I finally figured it out and went through that dark time, I was like, shit, Jerry Rice, you study his workout routine? I was like, man, I'm not doing that. I just show up and do what's required of me.
Mm. Wow, that's interesting.
And that makes you average.
I was different. I listened to all the greats and I wanted to surpass them. One guy would run 5 miles, then he walked back 5 miles after he finished running. Then he'd walk down the car. And whatever they did, I tried to supersede that. Mm. And by doing that, by superseding all the greats, I destroyed my body. Mm. Yeah. And then I found out training hard is ridiculous. You have to train smart.
Yeah. So,
you have to train smart. Like what he was saying, you have to train smart. Because you're told so many times, the greatest did this, the greatest did this. And at the end of the day, when it's all over, look how the greatest look.
Yeah.
No, look how the greatest look.
Yes.
And so you have to find that balance.
Yeah, listen, but know what's else interesting about the greats? Even though we see them fucked up, we try to reach that level, but we can't. Only the greats could reach that level. Only the greats.
It's interesting, though, when you study greatness and you study whether they're a business leader or an actor, like the endurance factor of the greats.
Yeah, the endurance. It's the endurance.
Like, damn. How do you work that long and hard and then get up and go do it again the next day?
Yeah.
And these guys are doing it. I had a chance to hang out with Dennis Rodman a lot when I was younger.
D-Rod. He's a friend of ours.
He's a guy.
Yeah, I love Dennis. And we used to go out. And he was the first person who taught me. This is right after I had some success. And we'd go to Vegas or whatever. And we'd get home late. We'd party all night. But he would call me at, we'd get home around 5 or whatever, 5:30. And he would call me at 9:30 and be like, hey, bro, let's go. And I'm like, what do you mean, let's go? Like,
work
out? I can't move right now. And he's like, let's go work out. Let's go. Come on. And I'm like, the endurance. Yeah. Like, this is why.
Yeah.
Like, how do you, can you force yourself to do that?
No. This is what, when I watch somebody like Ali, I watch somebody that's really the real deal, you know, and I say, well, then I know I'm not great. No. When you see greatness, then you know that's not me.
What do you mean?
That's just my ego. No, that's just my ego, nigga. Ali will fight you till he die. You have to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to quit.
Yeah.
Not really. I want to believe that I'm that guy.
Mm-hmm.
My ego tells me that, but the reality of it is that I love my beautiful wife. I love this life that I have. I can do almost anything. And I might not want to gives this up just to prove that I'm a tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
But Ali would.
Yeah.
Well, there might have been a time in your life, though, Mike, where you would have given it all up.
Well, I believe that was. I used to know I'm not him.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I know. Everybody can call me what they want and this and that. I'm not greater than Mike as I am. But I know. I know what greatness is.
Mm-hmm.
I know what real greatness is. Ali's an interesting guy, you know. He's really beautiful. He's better looking than you, and it's fine. And he's really mean and tough and determined and competitive. And well, let me call another. He's really game.
Mm-hmm.
What make him? Why is he that way?
Why? That's what I'm after too. Like, what makes somebody that?
What is it? It goes beyond himself understanding.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ali goes to the level where I'm afraid to go.
Yeah. And I've seen him. Like Randy Moss, Jerry Rice. Yeah. Their workouts, like people are like, you're throwing up every day. People can't handle it.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan type stuff.
Mm.
Talk about endurance. Like,
yeah.
The legendary stories about him.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant, late Kobe Bryant. Him, getting 3,000 makes. That takes 5 hours.
Yeah.
3,000 makes.
Yeah.
In one practice. And then come back and do it again the next day. Like, what's it about somebody that makes them want to do that? What do you think?
A lot of it has to do with self-hate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to be something. They saw something and they want to be that and they feel they're not that. And if they're not that, they're not. Life is nothing. Life is not. Mm-hmm. I believed if I wasn't a heavyweight champion and stuff, my life was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thought. It's like this. Where do we get our thought? Who created the thought?
Mm-hmm.
How did we You know, I heard that story of fucking the guy that saw himself in the mirror, Greek guy that fell in love, narcissist and stuff. But it's deeper than that. It's better than narcissist. Because most of us don't like ourselves. And we succeed and do so much greatness. And we're jealous of ourselves. Can you imagine that? I think it's the energy that we're jealous of. You know, because sometimes I say to myself, I say, why am I on this show? You know what I mean? I say to myself, fuck, I'm not that fucking smart. I get all this fucking, Mike's a guru, Mike's this and that. Mike has to deal with he's a megalomaniac, but he has a low self-esteem. Isn't that great? I think I'm God, but I deep down inside, I feel like I'm shit. But without that, I can't be who I am. Did that make sense to you?
It does make sense, and I think I've felt like that at times, and this has really just happened to me over the last year.
That's why
year and a half.
We become who we are because we don't like ourselves.
But here's what I want to get to this point, that I heard a great quote, that comparison is the thief of joy.
Definitely.
And
yeah.
I realized that I was always trying to compare myself to that guy. He's got more money than me, or he's more popular, or he has more stats, he's more yard. Oh, he blocks better than me, or whatever it is. I don't have a ring. I never won. Oh shit! I've never won a Super Bowl. Like, it's like, stop comparing yourself. At least this is what I tell myself, and I do this every day. I do my morning meditation. It's a lot of like, just let all that shit go.
Let it go,
and just be your best version.
Yeah,
and don't put all that pressure on yourself, because I think that's where you start to judge yourself.
Yeah,
that's not being in your heart.
Totally, man.
You know, and I wanted to. And coaches always say, "Play with your heart," and I never understood what that meant. But to me, what it means now is, when you're in your heart, there's no fear of judgment. You're totally present. You're not worried about the past, what happened before. You're not worried about the future. That's why a lot of guys miss the ring, maybe, or why guys would miss the field, because where else can you be that present? But you can. You can.
Yeah.
You got to work at it. And then it becomes habit. Just like it became habit to be on the football field, it can become habit in life, where you can just be totally present. You just have to keep concentrating and constantly reminding yourself that there's no else I'd rather be, that I'm in love with. Like, I can tell you're in love with life now.
Exactly.
And before, when you're comparing yourself, it's hard to be in love with life.
Listen, brother, it's true, I'm gonna tell you, man. And I'm mad that I love life. I'll get mad some fuck, nigga. What the fuck are you so happy for? But it's just
let that go, Mike.
You know, it's just beautiful shit. That's that street shit that holds on to you, that pretty shit. That, why are you so happy for, a motherfucker? You know where you came from? But I should be happy, because look where I came from and look where I'm at now.
Yeah.
But it holds you. It's almost like your mother gave birth to you, and you're fighting it. No, you're looking for your independence.
I love it.
It's good shit, man.
You guys go deep on here, man.
Yeah, we go deep,
I love
bro.
It. I love it.
Well, what was your last year? 17? 16?
What do you mean?
Your last season?
13. You're
13. Okay, so you've been out a little while now.
Going on 6 years now.
Okay. Yeah. So how has that been?
It was tough at the beginning.
Yeah.
Transition's tough.
Yeah. I'm 5 years out now. My last year is 14, and I feel like I'm just getting back on my feet.
Just getting back, yeah.
You know?
It takes at least for me.
Yeah.
Listen, it took around 3 years.
That's interesting stuff, because when we're doing our sports or whatever, our career, this is why we don't have to focus on us, because we have our career. Life is about, what's that word again I want to use? Inventory. Doing self-inventory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I do a lot of self-inventory. And know what I notice? I can't judge myself. Because I'm always fail my inventory. My inventory is like, how did I talk to that person today? Did I disrespect somebody? Did I hurt somebody's feelings today? Or did I bring joy to somebody today? You know, and most of the time I fail. So I've hurt somebody. Yeah, so I don't pass my inventories at the end of the day that well.
Well, as long as you're being honest with yourself.
No, I have to do that. Even if I'm not honest to whoever I love and care about, I'm always honest to myself, and I deal with that pain. But being honest with myself, I deal with pain.
Yeah.
I deal with pain with just being disciplined.
Yeah.
You know, with life, I have to be disciplined. Not in sports, but in life, I have to be
disciplined.
I learned discipline is doing what you hate to do, but do it like you love it.
Yeah.
You know, and
absolutely.
That's where discipline comes in handy. You got to have discipline. But when it comes to what you love, to me, I think discipline disappears. It goes back to that. Like if cookie, I love sweets and shit. I can't help it. I love them. The cookies. And if I gotta have, if I see two cookies in front of me and a chocolate chip, and somebody tells me I'm gonna eat the whole plate, I'm like, hey, you got to get this out of here. And it takes a lot of discipline.
How about if I tell you I don't know what I love?
Huh?
How about if I tell you I don't know what I love? I do it because I believe this is the right thing to do. I believe because he told me this. This is why I did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know
that one. You do it because you love it. You're saying, is that what you're saying?
No.
Like, you don't know why you love it?
Well, listen, how do you know you love it?
The cookies? The cookies. The sweets?
But how do you know?
As an example?
My temperature rises.
Yeah.
Check it out. It's 1970. What is it? 1978, 79, something to that effect. I'm in a reformatory. We're bad kids. I robbed some people, so we're all locked up here. Muhammad Ali came in there. He came to visit the kids. I saw him, and my life started. I said, "Hey, I bet you nobody picks on him." It's my mind was saying this shit. It's by the way, people when he came in, people would have lost their mind. The people that abuse us, the staff, they lost their mind. They were crying. The people that would abuse us, they were crying when they saw this man. They were at his mercy. So I said, "Fuck! I bet you nobody picks on him." And then a couple of months later, I got shipped out to another prison, another child prison. And then I met a guy that used to be a fucking fighter, a professional fighter. He started teaching me how to fight. He kicked the shit out of me at first, but he started teaching me now. After he kicked my ass, just to let me know I'm the boss. You know, he was a smaller guy than me. Mm. And just to let me know, but he taught me. Then he started teaching me. And then Bobby Stewart, then I must have hit him a jab. I broke his nose. He had the black eye. And he was mad once. I thought he was mad, but he was mad because his wife didn't like him having the broken nose and stuff. He said, "Listen, I'm not going to be able to box with you no more, but I'm going to take you to this other guy that's going to take you to the next level." And there I met Customato. Mm. How does that happen? I see fucking Muhammad Ali, and I start boxing. And then, then Sugar Ray Leonard fought Roberto Duran. Mm. After seeing that fight and seeing how people respond in the crowd and how the fight has so much control with life. Everybody was talking about that commercial with Duran and Linda. Everybody was 1980. So the fight, June 20th, 1980, they fought in Montreal, Canada. I watched the fight. I got turned out about fight. I said, "This is what I'm going to die doing." Mm. And I met Cousin, this fuck, right? Isn't that people? That's what life is about, beating people, people inspiring people. Just even me, a guy like me, I have low self-esteem. I inspire people. Look, Tyson Fury, to be people naming that, he's the heavyweight champ. I inspire people, even though with my low self-esteem. Mm. I can inspire greatness. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Because it's bigger than me. It has nothing to do with me. How I feel about myself is nothing. How I feel about life is nothing. It's just...
Well,
I don't know, it's the energy.
How you feel about yourself is part of your journey, though.
Absolutely, but my illusion of myself is a woo, fuck, listen, I'm talking, but my illusion of myself, listen, I don't know what's wrong with me. I was at a table with Cousin, my friend. He was a fighter, too, and he said something about Alexander the Great, and why did I fucking, he said he was like 6'5 during like 300 years before Christ. He was like 6'5, but he wasn't. He was really little. He was really small. Mm. He was so small that the fucking the equipment couldn't fit him. He was too small, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But his illusion of himself was big.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was Alexander the Great too.
Yeah.
There's also something that I heard about him too, that his mother told him from the beginning, since he was a little boy, that you are destined, you are part of the gods.
His mother's one of the first stage mothers in history.
Mm.
But they've been before, they've been thousands of years, millions of years before her, they've been stage mothers that inspired their son. Alexander, when you talk about Alexander the Great, you talk about him and Napoleon. And know what's the resemblance between the two? Because they were... Today we call them bitch-ass niggas, you know, because they're wimps. Not because they might be gay, but just because they're wimps and stuff. And that's what they were afraid of their mothers. Can you imagine that those powerful men are afraid of their mothers?
Mm-hmm.
That's why Alexander the Great. Now, he always kept
aren't
in touch with
aren't most men, though?
Huh? I was going to say, I was afraid
aren't
of my
most
mother.
Men afraid of their mothers? Mm-hmm.
Well, especially when there's no father there. Yeah. Yes, we are. They beat us viciously. Mm. and they love us, but they believe that's how men are supposed to be treated.
Yeah.
Ain't that crazy?
Interesting.
They believe that's how men are supposed to be treated. But then but then you see my wife, I have to say she babies my son. I see how her mother I see how the women of her family treat the men. I watched her family, I watched her aunts and her mother, I used to watch it, and they love the boys. They baby, they pamper the boys. And I come from the house where the boys get their fucking ass kicked in the fucking, get the fuck out of here, nigga. You want to fight me? Mm. I'm your father. You want to fight our feet? Get the fuck out of here. I'm from that world. Mm. I'm from the world where we automatically picks on the son, make him harder so we can kick him out. Mm. I'm from that world. But now being around the world, let the world change. Now I'm a bitch, and now I want, every time I have a daughter that's,
LGBT.
World. And why am I tough to my boy, but to her, I'm just a bitch. I'm weak. Mm-hmm. And then she wants, I love her to death and that stuff. No, why? Because she checks me. I can't say bitch. I can't say nigga. I can't say ho. I can't say nothing derogatory about women or nothing. Because she, hey, stop that shit. Mm-hmm. No, stop. She's just weird. And she's the only one in my family that checks me.
That's funny, you know? How your daughter's capable of that, huh?
Yeah, hey, I don't say it. Stop that. Don't talk. Don't say midget. What do I say then? Say small person. What? Small person? Hey, small person, how do I get to Harlem? Hey, small person, what time is it? What are you talking about? But I don't want her to ever run away, so I just say, hey, I'm with it. I want her to stay close to me. I love her to death. I used to listen to what she says. You know, I don't say bitch. I don't say nigga. I don't say hoe. I don't say nothing. I'm not who I am when I'm around her. Yeah. Because something about her is my mother.
Mm. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
The way she's not afraid of me is my mother. Mm-hmm. How come all my other kids, I wish they would fucking step to me. Why is she the one that I bow down to? Isn't that weird? Yeah, shit. Man. I'm a fucking monster. I'm a boss in my household. And now I've got to bow down to her. Because I don't want to lose her. I love her so much. Why do I love this girl? She's in that world. She does that thing. She's just so different than what I ever believed in. But I guess I don't want to ever lose her. All of our fears come out in our children. All of our secrets. All of our secrets, yeah, come out in our children. So, besides that,
what'd you say?
What about your children? You have children?
Yeah, I got 4 kids.
Talk to me about them.
I got an older one when I was younger.
Tell me, how old is he?
He's 18.
What is he like? What's his name?
His name is Nico.
How do you feel about him?
Love Nico. He's about to leave. Talk about, he's a senior, and he's going off to college next year. So, it's fine. You know what? I'm happy to see him get a chance to go be independent.
Yeah. That's good, man.
To go fall down, because he's...
You got to.
You create such a safety net as a parent who has, you know, I've done well, so yeah. I'm able to take care of all his needs. But that's the beauty of letting him go. As much as I'm going to miss him, I'm looking forward to seeing him deal with failure, to go through his fear. We talk about all the kids. I got an 11-year-old girl, 9-year-old boy, and then we got a 5-year-old daughter that we adopted.
Wow.
And seeing her, all their personalities come out and how they react to certain things. Because I've always been fascinated too. Like I got my brother, my biological brother, and 3 adopted brothers.
Mm.
And we all kind of grew up in the same house. The adopted brothers came a little bit later, like when I got to high school. But my biological brother, it's different. We're wired way differently. And the same... You would think the same lessons, because the same household, but he'll handle things way differently than me. It's with your children, you see them, how are they going to act around each other?
Mm.
And how are they internalizing what I say? See, there was a great story about Patrick Willis. He played linebacker.
Yeah.
I remember him. He's one of the greatest linebackers. He retired from San Francisco.
Awesome.
And his childhood was, I think his brother died.
Yeah.
He got his, one of those childhoods. Like,
yeah.
Talk about being from the ghetto and not having shit.
Yeah.
And basically, I think his mom was a drug addict. And I hopefully the story's not I don't know if the exact story. I just know his childhood, and he got kicked out. Basically, it was like that movie Blindside, where he grew up with a family adopted him. But then this guy's gone on to do great things. He's such a great man.
Yeah, he's incredible.
You meet
too.
Him in person, like, yeah. I love that. And this is who we go against. Like, I go against him a lot.
Yeah,
and he was a hard. And then off the field too, with charities and just a nice guy.
Just a massive heart.
Massive heart. And then you ask him, you go, why? What happened? Like, what happened to you being from where you are? And he says, what choice did I have? I had no choice. Seeing what I've seen growing up, I had no choice. And you know how many people are in jail or in bad circumstances that say the same thing. I had no choice. Look how I grew up.
Mm.
And so it's funny how he took it that way. I have no choice. But to see them and go, hell no, I don't want to be like that. I got to go this way. Where a lot of people will say, I had no choice. Look at them. I might as well be that way. Like, what's it about him and his heart that clicked for him that way? And I look at my kids and I look at me the way I did it. And I love my brothers. But, you know, we all make mistakes. But it's about how you bounce back from it and how you say, well, I'm going to move on now and go this direction. I'm not going to keep going that direction. And so I'm looking forward to see if I can guide my kids to dealing with that fear and with that adversity and making sure that when the shit hits the fan, like it's going to, it's going to.
Yeah.
A lot of millennials don't want to hear that. But you're going to fail. And that's part of it. That's part of the process. And I want to give them the tools on how to deal with that adversity when it comes.
You know, that's so awesome that you did. I wish, you know, you're awesome parent. But when I was a cuss, it was all about me being in love with myself and I'm better than everybody else. Can you imagine that? Yeah, he was an older guy. He was dying soon, so he didn't have time to explain, hey, Mike, you know, maybe you shouldn't do that to girls. Or maybe, no, we need, he wanted greatness. He wanted another heavyweight champion. Mm. And he was just, that's just who he was. He didn't create a death or dying. He just wanted accomplishments and stuff. You know, I come from a world where people are just ego-based. And ego-driven. I come from that world where people are, yes, they come from being brutalized, beaten and stuff, and yes, I don't know. My influence is from just old fucking Jewish communist people, you know, intellects, though.
Mm-hmm.
Really smart intellects and stuff. Because I never went to school and, you know, I say words and I just learned it from being around them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was an interesting life. I was raised, you know, you see I got Che Guevara, I see I got Mao on me. And I was raised by that type of mentality. God has loved Castro and thought Castro was a wonderful man. Stuff like that. It's just my world, you know. Hemingway, I learned a lot about books and stuff. The Prince. I learned a lot. That's all they talked about. They talked about books. They talked about, what was that guy named? The great writer. What was it? Tolstoy. They talked about Hemingway. We talked about these guys. They known these people are 80 years old when I'm 14. So they've known people like Tolstoy's wife or his nieces. You know, these are just people that had experience with people.
But you were fascinated by that when he was telling you that those stories. You were listening. Were you listening?
Absolutely. Hey, listen, absolutely.
And you loved that stuff. Like, why did you love that? Because, like I said, I had my father and my mom got divorced when I was 6.
Mm.
And I saw my father on Saturday, very religious man, but I didn't see him during the week.
Mm.
So he wasn't around. Not a bad guy, just wasn't around. And took us to trips. I want to make sure because I don't want to hurt. He took us on trips. But I had a stepdad named Michael Saltzman. He's passed on. And when he came into our lives, old, not older, just a Jewish man, very Jewish, lover of books. Like I said, I don't come from that educated background. Like my family, we didn't do that. That wasn't us. But with him, this man who came into my life was like all about books and higher learning. And he would tell me these stories. And we always bonded on books and lessons of life. And we got into like the whole, I remember... the Da Vinci Code, the symbolism of what life is and all deep conversations. Ooh. But I listened to it. I was into it where my brothers, they could honestly, they didn't give a shit. Like, that's where him and I bonded. And I'm wondering, like why were you so into that? Like, what about that spoke to you?
It spoke to me because I had no perspective on myself. Mm-hmm. So I meant nothing to me. So I looked for something to become something. Mm. Did that make sense?
You're a seeker.
Yeah.
That's what it is right there.
Yeah.
That's what I think that is.
Yeah.
It's that seeker. It's that curiosity.
Yeah.
You got to be curious if you ever want to be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody we talk about, if you're going to be great at something, you better be curious.
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty greatness profound.
Greatness is the willingness to die. Mm-hmm. Mm. That's greatness. Mm. Like you see these guys, forget about suicide guys. Forget about the guys. Just people that are decent people and just decide to kill themselves. Mm. You know? What makes a person does that? And they do it young age, 15, 16. And it's just, how do you say it? It's 15, 20 years old, you experience enough life to realize, hey, I don't want to be here no more. Mm. It's something about yourself that you just hate so bad. Mm. Any kind of killing is a form of self-hate. You know? If I'm killing somebody, it's just everything I say about him. If I call him a dirty motherfucker, that's because I'm a dirty motherfucker. Mm-hmm. If he's a bitch-ass nigga, it's because I'm a bitch-ass nigga. We reflect of one another. That's why people are inspired by it. That's how come we get inspired, you know? Because we're a reflection of one another.
Yes.
And they allow us to know what we can be. Mm-hmm. Even though we're in bad situations, this is what we can be. Mm-hmm. My whole life is about robbing. Listen, I come from that world of robbing. My mother's slept with me. My father's a pimp. And this is my world. Can you imagine? Look at me. I'm a fucking savage. I see my mother sleep with men, fuck me. And it's just who I am. Sex and me, that's probably why I got in trouble with sex, because sex and me is like, whoa, it's like breathing. And I know it should be like, but it's just like breathing, like perversity and sex and that stuff, and me in a room and a bunch of women, like, sex, and that's natural to me, because that's who my mother and father is. Mm-hmm. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
Even to this day, right now, I have to check myself. Always check myself.
Yeah.
You know, my wife is my consciousness.
Yeah.
Why is my masculinity in a woman? My mom, because my wife, my mother fucked me up. That's why my masculinity is in a woman. See, why am I so overbearing to my wife? My wife must say, this nigga's overbearing. As long as you love me, but the nigga is too much. I know she must think that, you know, because I'm afraid of losing her. And I think to myself, when I'm so aggressive and I love her and I give her so much love, that's chasing her away. But why can't I control it? Why can't I just stop and be in a Mac and with all the other people? Why can't I do that with her the way I do with everyone else, the other women? Like, they're nothing. Because my masculinity is in her. Because my mother fucked me up in some kind of way. Mm-hmm. Seeing her fuck men and seeing men fuck her and how she responds to all that stuff. And I want to make people respond the way my mother responds when I'm fucking, when I'm making love, or whatever we call it. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking for those sounds that my mother made that I heard her sing. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you unsee something? Mm. Can you?
No, you can't. No, brother.
You can't.
Listen. I'm in love with that picture. Mm. The people fucking my mother, I'm in love with that picture, that ecstasy. That passion, I'm in love with that. I keep rolling those pictures in my head. I'm in love with the pictures. I'm addicted to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Different. Mm. And how do you, well, at least for me, like I said, like going through hard times, and how do you change the story? How do you say, okay, I'm gonna change the story. Can't change what happened, but I'm going to change the narrative on how it spoke to me, and I'm going to make it speak to me this way now. Instead of that negative way, I'm going to make it be a positive way and be a light going forward.
Then when you do that, then no, that sounds great.
Sounds, yeah.
That sounds good, but then, and then we're dealing with what you're dealing with now. Mm. You don't want these people to know that I do this. Like me, I have no secrets of anything. Everybody, I'm so transparent. That's why I've lost so much, you know? So this is my only freedom, being able to be on this mic. And I don't like this because this makes people think that I'm somebody special. And I don't want nobody to think I'm somebody because I don't have a good opinion of myself. You know, but for my ego, this is great. You know, my ego is something I'm trying to get away from. But when I get away from that ego, when I distinguish myself, I'm such a coward. I need it back because I'm like, oh, I hate myself. When my ego goes away, I'm a bitch. I'm like, oh, I don't know what I am. Everything I'm afraid of, I don't know. Come back. I don't know. How do you get rid of that guy?
Mm-hmm. You talk about him.
Yeah. We need him. He's here for a reason. Yeah. Why is he here? And we keep getting away. No, my ego tells me
sometimes. You acknowledge
it. It tells me sometimes, listen, I tell you, you're going to do this shit? Look, this is where I got you. I got you here with Rob. I got you here with Tyson fucking Ranch. I got this. This is what I got for you, Mike. But listen, only thing I want you to do to pay me back, all right? I just need you to, I need you to fuck her. And then we're even. That's what my ego tells me. I need you to fuck her. You fuck her, and then we're even, Mike. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to fuck nobody but my wife.
Yeah.
But that's what Mike would say. I gave you all this. Just do me a favor, Mike. Fuck her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck the ego, man.
Huh?
Fuck the ego.
Hey, listen, that's what everyone says. You're saying it now, but it has you, it has all of us.
Oh, I know.
We can't live without it.
Well, it comes, and it's going to come. I was listening to something last night on, I think it was on Alan Watts. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Alan Love
Watts
is Alan.
Beautiful. Yeah, and he was talking about a Buddhist story or whatever, and a great Buddhist was saying that there is no such thing as permanence.
Mm.
That you will not be a permanently blissful or happy.
Yeah.
Just like you won't be permanently sad or ego-driven. That it's going to come, but it's about letting it come and don't run from it.
Yeah.
Talk about don't be afraid of it. Take it.
Yeah.
And then go through the other side of that because that's where the life is.
This is going to be, why do we listen to these people? The fuck are these people? They don't even look like us. Why do we listen to them? Mm-hmm. He's from another fucking way of living, life, strength. You know, he don't look like us, think like us, or nothing like us. Why do we listen to them?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Maybe because I'm thinking that it's an energy that you can feel wherever you're at that point. If you're ready for that, it'll hit you. Just like if you see a pimp on the corner and that speaks to you and you say to yourself, I want to be like that. That's where you're at that time energetically. Or when you see a pimp on the corner and you say, I'm not there. I'm somewhere else. I'm not saying it's better or it's worse, but I'm at a different energy, vibration, and frequency. Your frequency is your currency.
I don't
that's
know.
Where you're at. I don't know.
From the world, I think we don't like what we're doing. That's why we listen to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's we in some way we take what they say and we want the world to believe that we said it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the perspective of ourselves. That's the what I say we do. What's that word I used again?
Self-reflection.
Illusion?
Examining yourself. Yeah.
Inventory.
When you do your inventory, you can't lie. That's why when I do my inventory, I can't lie to myself.
Yeah.
You know, and I just say, fuck.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
These are the things that I have to deal with.
Yeah.
It's good that you're asking these, because most people are too afraid to ask questions about themselves.
Oh, listen.
Well, here's the thing, though, pain. Mike, about the ego. And Alan Watts talks about this. Is that the ego is an illusion that you've created. There's no spot in your brain that generates this shit. The ego is this fucking creation.
So why do we create them?
To protect yourself.
Yes.
To keep yourself safe.
Yes.
To aspire because you can't imagine that you can be the person that everyone loves and holds up in all of your successes.
No, my ego tells me. My ego knows that I'm a great follower of Alexander the Great. My ego said, fuck that nigga. What it took him 20 years to do, you do in one fight. What it took him 20 years to do for people to know who he is, I do it in one night. Huh? But still, I don't want to think of myself as something great. Something has to be great in order for me to. I can't look at me, it's just me. It's just my low self-esteem. Maybe it's something I have to want to follow something. is bigger than me. Something has to be bigger than me.
Yeah, I get that.
What about healthy ego?
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Is there a healthy ego?
That's what I think I have.
I think so.
No?
I think I have a healthy ego. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes. Because a healthy ego is when you don't respond to your ego.
Yeah.
When you don't act out what it's telling you to
do. Yes, exactly.
When you laugh at it, no way, motherfucker.
You're not going to live in reaction.
It's hard to get to that point.
Every, listen, we're human beings, and this is the deal, right? That no one wants to believe. That sometimes the nicest person amongst the fucking Sister Teresa, Mother Teresa, they think sometimes, they see somebody and say, I want to kick them in this fucking head. And they know they can't stop why they think like that. I want to punch them in this fucking face. I want to fucking castrate. And we don't know why we say that and think those things.
That's the animal mind.
And then we go back to that. No, that's not good. Praise be to God. Oh, Lord, please forgive me. Oh, Jesus, please help me in this and that. Oh, God. And why do we do that? That's why religion comes in. It just gives us a way to live. Even though we may think, oh, fuck, religion, this is for the man and this and that. But it gives us a
structure.
It gives us a
spiritual structure.
Yeah, I like that, too. Because everybody always say, hey, fuck religion, I'm spiritual. But you got spiritual from religion. You know?
Well, maybe
no,
not.
You have to know about, you have to know about religion. You have to hear what these people are talking about and say, hey, I don't like that, but I like this. This is who I am. That's why I say, when I look at books, I say, this is who I am. We are who we are, and we're seekers, like you said. Hmm. And we don't like certain things about us, and we want to go like this. Like, I don't like this. I like Arnold Rothstein. Even though he's a criminal and stuff, I like this about him. I like the fact that he likes to teach everybody. Like, if you want to be in his group, if you want to make money with him, you have to learn how to eat. You have to learn how to fucking dress. He wanted you to prepare for life, even though these were criminals. He was preparing Lucky Luciano, all the Mayan lands. He was the father of crime. Mm. But he had class. You know, he's always dignified. He said, always look nice. He sees somebody, he said, see him take. Get a haircut. It was always about looking good. Even though you were doing bad, but you were looking good doing bad. You know, it was all about self-image, who you wanted to be, like we're discussing, the illusion of ourselves, who we are.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we're running out of time.
But we can do it all day, though.
No, we got some time. We got like 20 minutes. But, Tony, so you're on Fox NFL Sunday. You're doing that thing. You're an analyst. How has that been when it comes to all of this stuff, the ego that you had created, this persona that you created as one of the greatest football players of all time, transitioning that, maybe even killing that guy to become this next phase, to come into this next phase of your life. And you've got your podcast wide open, which is dope as hell. And, you know, you're really a guy that should be out there speaking and getting your message and spreading your light. And I'm just curious, how has that been transitioning into that role? From, you know, once being at the top of the mountain in the NFL.
Yeah, it was tough at the beginning. I got a job. From the outside looking in, everybody thought it was like this cream puff job. And I was working for CBS on the main desk. And I was flying out to New York every week. And I loved it while I was there, but just something was stopping me from being. You can never recreate that football feeling. And I realized it's not even about, it's an emotional thing. But I was scared. I was scared to show who I am in front of the camera. When that red light's on, you know, there's millions of people watching.
We all are.
And I was scared. And so I had a hard time with it. And I never felt like I was really myself. And I always apologized to people from CBS. thank you for my opportunity. But it was like you never really got to see me in front of that camera, fully me. And it's because I was just afraid. And I remember I was up for renegotiation, and I did a good job. It just wasn't where I wanted it. And I was in Spain. I was sitting in a little cafe. I was with my wife, and we were sitting there talking. She's like, hey, is the deal almost done? And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty much done. And she goes, like, happy with it? And I, like paused.
Mm.
And I started crying. And I'm like, and she's like, what's wrong with you? And I said, I don't know. I feel like I'm about to have an anxiety attack.
Mm.
Like, if I signed this contract with them, first of all, I was away from my family. Because I'd have to travel 3 days a week, and I have those four kids all in the house, and I was like, I don't like being away from them. I don't feel like I am myself on this show for whatever reason. It's just not working for me. And that's kind of when life took off for me again.
Mm.
Like from that moment, and that's why rock bottom, quote unquote, rock bottom moments are good to me.
Yeah,
I like it when I hit that because that means I'm challenging myself. I'm asking the questions. I'm not avoiding that shit. I'm not going to say I'm going to do it anyway because I'm afraid.
Ain't that bitch when you're rock bottom, there's no fucking pressure. Yeah. Bottom.
And a lot of people don't want to do that because they'd rather say, oh, you know what? Just keep doing it. You'll get through it. It's like, no, I need to throw my hands up and say, I don't know. I'm stuck right now and I'm lost, but I'm going to get out of this and it's going to work. And that's how you got good people around you. My wife is brilliant wife, where she's like, it is okay, it's okay, you can do it, you can. And then from that moment I was like, I can't do this job anymore. And people were like, my agent and my manager, they were both like, you're making a career decision here, you're making a mistake, you'll never get it, you're not going to Fox because they don't have any spots over there, you're not going to ESP, you're not going to go do this stuff, you're gonna have to figure. And I said, I'm gonna let go and we'll see. It's gonna turn out good for me. I can't live like this. I'm not going that way anymore. I'm going to go the other way. And so I dropped out, started learning, and it's funny how life opens up. Yeah. That's why I always say, one of my quotes is, life takes off on the other side of fear. Once you can go through it, it's funny how the universe or life, whatever you believe in, opens up to you and says, yeah, there you go, son, daughter, you did it. Now I'm going to reward you for that.
Yeah.
Because you were afraid to do that. And most people are afraid. And that's what I'm saying. That's where you want to be in life. And that's why you want to be in uncomfortable situations. You want to be in front of this microphone to expand yourself, you know, to get better. Yeah. And that's what took off for me. And then I was able to. It's funny. Fox opened up. End of the story is, a job opened up at Fox miraculously. The guy who was there went to go to the FBI, Peanut Tillman.
Oh, no shit.
He went to the FBI. And his spot opened up, and they're like, wow. And it's funny. It's like, wow, they opened up.
Of course.
And then the things that happened to me at Fox, I love working there so much. The atmosphere is so great. The guys like Michael Strahan and Terry Bradshaw and Howie Long and Michael Vick I'm working with. Carissa Thompson. Yeah. Like, it goes on and on. Like, I love the execs. It's my vibe. It's me. And it's 10 minutes from the house.
That's
so it's great.
Man.
Oh, we don't have much time. Okay.
No, go ahead.
I guess this is what my mentor taught me. You know, after him living his life, he's born in 1908, but after him living all this crazy life and doing it, this is what he told me. When you have everything in the world, when you have it all, you know, there has to be something worth giving it up for. Mm. Not your family. It has to be something in you that has to be worth. Something has to, you have to give it up. Fuck, lose it all. You know? Like when I was hearing you saying all these good things, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to get this, and then some people, boom, and they just go. Mm-hmm. How do we rebuild?
Yeah.
How do you reset your mind and say, hey, fuck that shit, nigga, we're going to do it again.
Yeah. But it's hard, though. it was hard. It's not like it didn't. Yeah, I made that decision. It's not like it got immediately better. Yeah. Like I still was in some shit for a while.
Without struggle, there's no progress. Absolutely. We know who we are.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
And that's the worst. That's what we don't want to find out. Life prepares us. It forces us to find out who we are.
Yeah.
You know, and like who we are. Because we're not going to like who we are sometimes. And we have to, life has forced us to like who we are and accept who we are. Whatever happened to me.
Yeah.
And accept who we are.
Yeah. It's like being in the mirror. So I did a lot of techniques too. Like there's this great lady who I've had on Wide Open too. It's an unbelievable session with her. Her name's Marissa Peer. She's a hypnotherapist.
Mm. Oh, that's cool.
I grew up hypnotized. Since I was 14, I've been getting hypnotized. You know, my whole career. I don't do it anymore, but I just know the I do it to myself.
Yeah.
But I say I don't do it no more. That's a lie.
Yeah.
I do it to myself.
So I wrote, one of her big things was, I am enough.
That's such a big one.
I wrote that in my wife's lipstick, and it stayed up. And that same lipstick, I told the people when they come, you know, help us clean the house, that don't take that down. Mm. And that stayed there for a year. Mm. So every day I'd look into the mirror, I would see, I am enough. Like, I got this.
That's dope.
Like, you have to, and it's just like on the football field. That's kind of probably the biggest thing that was stopping me while I was dropping the balls. When that ball was coming to me, it was, don't drop the ball. Don't drop it. Mm. And I'd catch it most of the time, but I would drop it occasionally. And that's why I led the league in drop passes, where I had to switch that mentality along with falling in love with it and getting catches before practice, an extra 300 catches a day versus what I was doing before. It was I got this when that ball is in the air. Mm-hmm. It's like there's nothing you can do to stop me.
How much do your wife and family have to do? That right, that moment, how much do they have to do with that? The energy you just had. You see all that stuff? How much do your wife – I wanted to talk about your wife. How much your wife have to do with that?
She's everything to me. She's you talk about my ego. She is the one who can build me up, but not tear me down. She's always like, you got this. Before shows, big, like we left for the Super Bowl week, she's like, you're going to do a great job this week. And it's part of that Alexander the Great or cuss with you, like telling somebody that you love and respect that will tell you that you can do this and that you, it's like being a great parent. It's like tell your kids that there's, you are limitless and you are powerful. If you keep your ego in check and you go this way, you're going to, it's not if, it's when. It's going to come to you. And so I believe that if you have that, if you can walk around with that feeling when the shit comes, with the inevitable shit that's going to come, it's going to happen to you. But you just know. It's like kind of like trust. It's like when you stepped into the ring or when I stepped on the field, you stepped on the field, you have to really trust. That's confidence.
Yeah.
Like trust it's going to work.
Yeah.
It's going to. And if you beat me on this play, I'm going to come back. And I'm prepared to go to the distance. And a lot of that being prepared comes from, I don't know, maybe how you grew up, that dog mentality. We talk about that.
No, listen.
In a sport, athletic field.
This is what Muhammad Ali amazes me in so many different fashions, because when I look at Muhammad, I think, for one, I don't think Muhammad Ali ever had a street fight. He had, it was a big guy, it was a guy that was a bouncer, and everybody was afraid of him in the neighborhood in St. Louis, in Louisville, right? And he was a boxer, too. So he was a tough guy in the neighborhood, he beat up, like, knocked guys out in the bar, you know, because he's the bouncer and stuff. And so Gene Till was boxing. Ali was scared to death of him, but he just was hitting him with a jab. He broke his nose, and they stopped the fight or something. And I believe Gene Kilroy had told me that Ali stayed in the house for 2 weeks. He was scared the guy was going to beat him up and stuff. You know, but just to see a guy like that, listen, he was using his thing, talking shit about Sonny Liston and your ugly bear and something, and Sonny Liston smacked him, right? And Ali was scared. He didn't know what to do, right? So how do you come from being afraid of this guy to the next thing you know, you're kicking his ass? And where does that confidence come from? Where did it come? Where did it come from him getting smacked to, like, I'm going to kick his fucking ass? What happened?
Here's my opinion, because I had a bully when I was growing up, and he used to come every single day. And I would strategically hide my skateboard. I lived in Huntington Beach, so we did that. And I would skate home, and I was definitely scared of this guy. Mm. I didn't go to school dances. I didn't hang out after school. I heard the stories how this guy beat two guys up and smashed one in the head with a brick. And I was just – and it culminated at the end of my school year. Everybody graduated. I went and hid at my eighth grade graduation. My whole family's looking for me. And it was like out of a movie. They all came up and they saw me. And I was cowering behind a wall. And I remember that was the remember, I played Pop Warner football before that, and I said to myself, I'll never see that look on their face again. My mom's face and my brother's face, my brother Chris. Everybody else, I can't remember, but I remember seeing my mom's face. She didn't say a word. She just looked at me and gave me that look like just absolute disappointment. Mm-hmm. And my brother mouthed the words. He was like, what are you doing? Because they had all known about it. They had been trying to get me to fight this guy, but I was scared. And I remember I said to myself, never again. I will take an ass whooping. I don't care. I will die before I run away from anybody ever again. And I think that's part of it. I've been noticing this too about these movers and shakers. We're very sensitive people.
Yeah.
And that embarrassment, and the same thing happened when I dropped all those balls. I was like, that will never happen again. I won't be that guy dropping balls.
Yeah.
I will kill myself. Not kill myself, literally. I will go to the ends of the earth, and I'll do whatever it takes. I'll run 100 sprints after practice. I will jeopardize my body now, like you said. I will beat it up to oblivion in order to not go through that feeling again. I don't ever want that feeling again. Mm. You have to get past that, though. You have to get past that.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer, but that guided me through that time in my life.
It's dope, man. Mike?
Yeah.
We got to wrap it up. We got to wrap it. Tony, man, thank you so much,
thanks,
brother.
Appreciate it.
And really beautiful.
Hey, check out, you want to give a shout out for your social media stuff?
Tony Gonzalez 88. You can check me out there, or you can go to the Wide Open, all major podcast platforms, and check that out.
Awesome. So. You got anything with Fox until next football season?
Nothing.
You guys are good. Yeah.
I just want to say one thing before we go away, right? Me, you, all three of us, right? What the motherfucker. Why do we think that motherfuckers gotta watch us and we gotta look and they gotta have to absorb? Why do we think that?
I don't
know. Why do we? Why are we born thinking that? You know, that's the motherfucker. We want people to watch us excited. You know, we want to entertain people. We want people to fucking suck our dicks. We want people to worship us. That's the word.
Well, that way. Well, I think for the podcast stuff.
No, listen, yeah. Listen. Why do we want people to worship us? Why we think we're that person? Why do we think we're descendants from God? Individually. We don't think that. We think we're better than people in a certain way. We don't say it in a way because, look, why is everybody like that and we're like this?
Well, you know, my thing on that is...
Well, is it just that they don't want to put in the work? No, it's more than that.
I felt that way at the beginning, and I ain't gonna lie. I felt that way. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's wrong with that. That was just part of my growth process. But at this point now, I think the reason you're sitting here and you're sitting here is because we feel like we have a story to tell that can help people.
Yeah.
It's coming from a place of love now to, like,
yeah.
Don't... Like, I don't believe in the chosen one. Like, we were talking backstage before we came on. Like the movie The Matrix. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Because he finally figures out that he is the one. And I believe if you're the one, then I'm the one, yep. Then you're the one. And anybody out there listening, like, you have an amazing power to go out there and do all this. The success leaves clues.
Yeah.
Listen to these stories and try them out. Don't be afraid. And that's part of it. At least I like to think. And maybe there's a little ego in that too.
Yeah.
Ego is, know what else ego is? Ego is believing that we're going into an afterlife and we're not going to die. Our ego saying we're going to live forever. That's, you know, when the reality is, nigga, it's like everything else, we're gone. Mm-hmm. It's the experience of life and we should appreciate that. But we want to live forever. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
It is. Well, you guys will get into it more.
All right, we're going to go for it.
Hey, everybody.
Hey!
Thanks for listening to this episode of Hot Box, and thank you, Tony, for coming. It's great to have you in here, man. Sharing your wisdom.
I always have fucking opinion about him that's totally wrong and shit.
Yeah, I know. The guy's fucking cool, man. Hey, everybody.
Life is great.
Life is great. Thanks for watching this episode of Hot Box, and check out Tony's pod, Wide Open.
I'm going to be on there next.
Until next time, I'm Evan Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson.
And we're out of here.
Hey, do you want anybody to know anything about you or anything?
They know it.
They have Wikipedia. Come on now.
Hey, 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 this is NFL Hall of Famer Ray Lewis. I'm excited to announce the launch of my new podcast, Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast. I'll be talking with friends, family members, old teammates, athletes, celebrities, moguls, and guess what? I'll be talking to you. Listen, this is all in the search for everyday greatness. So I'm asking you to come along with me on this ride. Download new episodes of Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast, every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on PodcastOne.com. It's not what you have, it's what's inside of you that actually inspires greatness.